Now here's our host, David Hamm.
Today I'm joined by Chris Buescher. That's how you say your last name, right? I mean, I know I've known you long enough, but
yeah, it's Buescher.
Buescher.
I mean, easy enough, I guess. It's way simpler than it looks.
So. Yeah, I guess I never really asked you that question. I mean, I got you sign my hat back in 2015. I'm sure some other people out there would like to have this.
That's an old school hat there. That one's making me feel old.
Yeah. I mean, did you get one of these?
Yeah, I have a couple of those ones, a couple of the Victory Lane hats from that year. And my wife will tell you, she hates my hat collection, but I've got them stored everywhere.
That's
so.
Same here, man.
Yeah.
And I'm also joined by Phil Cavalli over here to my left, and he'll be reading some of your comments and questions and such. So I hope y'all enjoy the show. I'm really excited to have Chris here because it's been a little while since I've seen you because you left the Ford camp for just a couple years. But you got back. Yes.
We made it back home, yep. So, it was a trying year coming back to the Ford camp and mm-hmm. back to Roush Fenway. But, at the end of the day, was excited to be back in a blue oval. It was I've always been a Ford guy. I've got several Ford pickups that swap out driving day to day. It's mm-hmm. Something that I just I've been a fan. I've enjoyed racing Ford since I started in stock cars mm-hmm. and never really did anything else. So, it was a strange couple years away, but glad to be back. And I wish it was under more normal circumstances, but mm-hmm. we're making the best of it, and we're getting there.
Well, how cool is it, too? You get in that, the 17 car, which is the I was trying to think of a cool whatever. The car's been around forever, and it's won a lot of races. So, you know, what else can you say? Because I remember, Matt Kenseth were driving at the 17 Visine and the Busch Series with his dad and Robbie Reiser and John Reiser and yep. them guys.
Oh, yeah.
That was always cool to see. I always went over and talked to them every chance I got.
Yeah, so the ARCA car was number 17 through the years, and some mm-hmm. of that was to show appreciation for Robbie Reiser, who mm-hmm. Between him and the Reagan family, David and Ken Reagan, and trying to help me kind of get my foot in the door and get started in big time auto racing, I guess they were mm-hmm. ones that had a huge hand in it. So mm-hmm. we ended up running the 17 number through all of our ARCA races with the Ruo brothers team up in Midlothian, Illinois there. So,
yep.
It was kind of neat to come full circle, come back to the 17, back in a Ford Mustang for the first year, and also back in a Fastenal Ford Mustang, which is actually where I ended my last Roush Fenway race mm-hmm. when you got the hat.
That's right, yes.
At a Homestead that year. So, yeah, it was it's kind of funny how it all works back around.
I remember you complimented my hat because it was a nice blue Fastenal hat the day that you came by the shop.
Yeah, yeah.
And going by Fastenal, and we got a really cool deal on some good stainless bolts and stuff, too. So, Phil's seen all my bolt collection. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I'm going to have to check this one out then, yes. huh?
And I got some of my Fastenal bolts still in the package, and I was like, do not mix these up with my other. I said, well, I guess I can take a magnet and go through and figure out which ones are which, but please don't get them mixed up. Yes.
So you get to frequent the local Fastenal stores from time to time too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like them. All right. So tell us, just start from the beginning. You were born on this day and what the weather was. I'm kidding. Just like you were born in Texas, right?
So I was born in Florida. But so I still claim Texas as home. I was really young when we moved, and I grew up in Texas, mm-hmm. went to school out there, until I moved to Charlotte when I was 16. So,
okay.
Right before 16.
And when you moved to where, when you were 16?
So, I moved into, Kannapolis.
Okay.
When I left, Texas, my family was pretty deeply rooted in there. I've got two younger sisters that were pretty heavily involved in, extracurricular activities as well. So mm-hmm. it wasn't really a situation where my family could just up and take off halfway across the country. So
sure.
I ended up moving in with David Reagan's parents and okay. his older brother, Adam. So mm-hmm. It was one of those things where, and Ken was talking, he's like, well, if you're really serious about this, you have to be in North Carolina. Like, this is where mm-hmm. you're going to have to be. And,
right.
Him and my dad were talking, and it's like, man, that's just not really something doable. He said, well, just send them out here. Mm-hmm. He said, we'll put them to work in David's shop. We'll get him to homeschool and finish out his high school at the house. And if he'll cut the grass and keep the yard up and keep up with his schoolwork, then we'll give him a room to stay in and try and help him get his foot in the door. So that
that's cool.
Ultimately is how it ended up. It was a very unique situation when you go back and really think it through. So it is kind of different. It was a lot of fun to do it that way, and mm-hmm. really, started going over to Roush to help in the pit stop practice area. Go down there and just clean wheels, glue lug nuts, mm-hmm. and go down there, drive pit stop cars. It would be full Wednesdays, and they'd run, three cars at a time back then. So it was getting pit stop practice in and getting to know a couple people, and got to know Robbie Reiser pretty well through that. And ultimately, that's what helped get the that development program with the Ruo brothers going.
Isn't his the pit road there named after him, right?
Reiser Way.
Yes, Reiser Way.
Yep. Hey. From my understanding, they said Reiser wanted a pit stop practice area, and Jack didn't, but they said Reiser always got his way, so they named it Reiser Way.
That was going to be my comment about it. I'm pretty sure he most of the time got his way. Yes, for sure. And so I want to do a shout out right quick to our Sheriff Darren Campbell here in Iredell County is tuned in, and I want to tell him hello and thanks for keeping us safe. And my buddy Gary Flattery's up there in the Ozarks. You ever been up to the Ozarks in Iowa? I think they are. But he had a broken ankle or something. Anyway, it looked like he had on foot warmers or something, a big cast. So, but that was my comment about you. You said you went from Florida to Texas and then to Charlotte, or I guess Kannapolis area, whatever.
Yeah.
But that was like most of the time people move to Florida. So.
No, we were getting out.
Yes. And, there you go.
It was for work for Dad that ended up going out to Texas originally. And, I'm from Texas. I've been in North Carolina longer than I was in Texas now, though. So, I'm still claiming it. It's still home. I still miss it. My family's still down. They've moved down to South Texas around the Austin area. So, I get to go back for Christmas and, some of the races. I'm excited about COTA actually, cause that's only 45 minutes down the road from them. So that'll be a good one to be able to see them and, actually go stay at the house and see my sisters and everything. So
very
works
good.
Out pretty good.
What's your sisters' names?
Nikki and Brooke.
Nikki and Brooke.
Yeah.
And your wife's name?
Is Emma.
Emma, okay. Yep. And did you give your dad one of these hats, by the way?
As long as he didn't give it away, he has a hat, yes.
Okay, good.
So he's pretty good at re-gifting stuff and trying to
I've done that too.
Build the fan base.
Yeah.
And so he gives away a lot of stuff. He's like, hey, you got any more? I was like, well, maybe I'll be look.
Right. Yes, I know. I've done it. And I used to give my dad would always get first choice in my hats, and my son, and I would be like, man, I really love this hat, but I'm gonna give it to my dad or give it to my son. So
I figured I started getting some sheet metal, some full doors off of some of the cars. I was like, he's gonna have a really hard time finding somebody that wants a full door. So.
Oh yeah. Give him stuff that he can't get rid of.
Yeah.
So tell us about your so you got into doing. What's the first form of racing you got into?
Motocross. So, four wheels was not my original plan, but I think it was always my mom's plan.
Yeah.
Started racing motorcycles when I was six and had a lot of fun with it. I mean, I was decent at it for being 6 or 7 years old at the time. I don't remember much of it, but, basically started traveling around Texas doing that. Nothing too crazy, but for fun, it went on weekends and would run a couple races and got a bunch of trophies built up. It was awesome at the time. They were giving out trophies that were 5 or 6 foot tall, and here I am 3 or 4 foot off the ground and staring at these things like, man, that's cool. Like, this is awesome. So kind of got a bug from it. And I guess to start or a little bit earlier than that, my dad was just he's a hot rod guy. Mm-hmm. So he's always had stuff in the garage they'd been building or messing with. So I can remember back, he built a 67 Cobra kit car from basically scratch. Ended up building most of their own components along the way, him and a buddy. And he finally got done with that thing. It's been probably 8 or 10 years ago now, but he was building that my entire racing career. He was working on that car, trying to get it ready. So it was something that just got to watch be built from the ground up. And before that, it was all kinds of different things. Chevelles, and
does he still have it?
He still got it. Yep, he still got it. And now he's on new a 56 Ford pickup.
Okay, nice.
Yep.
Would you say he's one of your biggest influences? It sounds like, pretty much. I mean,
yeah, definitely. That's definitely what got me.
Yeah, interesting.
On anything with wheels or a motor or both.
Yeah,
ideally. Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's cool. So then you started racing in what series did you start in?
So after
Legend series.
Yeah.
Legends.
So after motocross, went into Bandoleros and Legends cars.
I kept wanting to say Bandoleros, but I know we'd mentioned that. So.
Yeah, so I did run Bandoleros for several years till I was 12, old enough to get in a Legends car. So, the motocross stuff got a little, I won't say it got more dangerous, but I took a trip over the bars and got run over by a kid that was behind me, and didn't hurt me, but scared my mom.
Oh yeah, well I understand.
So I think that was the big push to get into a different sport. It was kind of, we'd also moved from the Plano area up to Prosper, and it was farther away from both motocross tracks. So it was well over an hour. And I think it was the ultimatum that my family sat down and gave me. They're like, all right, look, you got football, you got, and I don't remember the other choice, basketball or baseball, whatever they were.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I don't want to do any of that. I want to go racing again. So
yeah, there you go.
they gave me that spiel a couple times, and finally told them, I was like, that's just, it's not me. I want to race something. So got in the Bandoleros, four tires, roll cages, seat belts, all big hitters with mom and dad at the end of the day. So
sure. Yeah.
That was 9 years old. And 10 years later, we were in an ARCA car testing at Michigan after the repave, running 215, 220, something like that.
Wow, yeah.
it was insanely fast after the repave. That was actually right before they went to the spacers in ARCA. So,
okay. Were you driving it? Was that a Robert Yates engine in there?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So all of our entire ARCA career was in Roush Yates engines, whether they were. We actually went through the transition of the D motors to the FR9s in ARCA when it was pretty several years ahead, I guess, on the Cup side. But
yep,
that was a big
that.
Retrofit, I remember, for the ARCA cars, getting all that figured out.
I'm sure, yeah. And I remember going through that with some of our, on the engine side, of course, yes. Hey.
Hey, bud.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
Good. This is Nick Ramey. Remember Nick Ramey?
Yeah, what's going on, Nick?
Hey, buddy, you doing all right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're just getting started here.
I figure it's...
Just getting started? Have you got into the ARCA stuff yet?
We're just getting into a little bit of ARCA stuff, so that must be why you're here.
That's right. That was a good time, and I seen my text say call right then. That was perfect timing.
Yeah. No, I think, man, we got a couple tens of thousands of miles together rolling around the country racing ARCA. We didn't have that luxury of flying anywhere back then, so we got our seat time, our steering wheel time in vans and pickup trucks.
Yeah,
well, flying that was almost unheard of. We got in the white dually and we went.
Yeah, that was it gave you a whole new appreciation for getting on a plane and flying to a Pocono or a Michigan nowadays.
we definitely logged some miles. I'll tell you what, Chris, you've done a heck of a job, buddy. I'll tell you, everybody in our shop's really proud of you.
I appreciate it. I've had a lot of fun through the years, and I appreciate your friendship and everything we did back in the ARCA days. It was it's a lot of fun. We got to win a lot of races there too, so that was always makes it a little bit better, right? And go get a championship at the end of the day. So,
yeah.
I guess at some point,
and you got
have
the,
to.
All the time you got to spend with the Rulo brothers.
Yep. Got to learn a ton from them as well, and
yeah,
all the traveling with them as well. That was the story's going to have to come up before too long. From the ARCA year 2012, when we won the championship, right? The hose clamp that you were able to tighten and keep water in the thing, so that we could finish every lap of competition that year. That was that was as close as we got ever, was that that Salem race there.
Yeah, it was pretty scary. I think they red flagged you, stopped you on the backstretch there, right?
Yeah, boy. So we were leading, and we got wrecked with some lap cars, and knocked the nose, the tail off. That was a rough one. I think the spoiler was about hanging off in the back. So,
but there wasn't a straight panel on that car.
No, there was. Actually, I believe to this day there is a picture of that car in the parts room at Roush up on jack stands in post race tech, because we still finished second with it. So that was was one of those never give up stories right there.
Yeah, we got pretty scared. We could see the car on the backstretch, and we were looking really good with the binoculars, and we saw water running out the front. And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, we're in trouble!" we got to get it in. And Gary called it in, and we raised the hood and took a screwdriver and was able to tighten up that clamp and keep you going.
Yeah, pretty wild when you think about it now.
So I had this
pretty wild.
I had this image up here. Can you see that, Chris?
Yeah.
Let's see if I can get it back on the screen here. And
that was Michigan.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nick sent me some of these pictures, and I was trying to get them to stay on the screen, but anyway, there it is. Yeah. So there's Nick, and so tell us who the rest of the guys are here. I know there's Nick and
Who do we have there? I think it was Michael Reardon, right?
I can't quite see the screen, but that would Michael Reardon.
Yeah, we used to call him Tree Stan.
Tree Stan. I completely forgot about that.
Remember that?
Yeah, I completely forgot about
that. We called him Tree Stan because he fell out of a tree deer hunting.
Oh, my gosh.
And blackened both of his eyes and come into work, and they said, "What happened to you?" Yeah, fell out of a tree stand. So that was his new nickname.
Yep, and then let's see. We got Nick there. He holding half the flag, and then the Rulo brothers.
Yep.
You got Gary was crew chief, and Rusty was car chief, and between the two of them, Gary's son David and a bunch of help that came in after their real jobs during the week up there in Midlothian. That was a pretty neat operation. That was Saturday night racing at its best. But on a
he had some good guys, didn't he?
Absolutely.
I mean, some really good guys that helped him.
People that were diehard racers, and that was what made it successful. What was people coming over and putting in the time and the effort to make it right. It was pretty impressive. You learned so much through those days, and man, it was some wild hours through the years. But it was definitely worth it there for what was it? Almost a dozen wins and a championship at the end of the day. We had a great time. So it was a learning experience. That was my first time in a stock car that was of any weight.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had run 6 late model races and 6 ASA truck races out on the West Coast.
About that.
Before getting into an ARCA car. So we didn't spend much time late model racing. Went straight to a 3,400 pound stock car and tried to get as close as we could to what a cup car would be.
A big difference, huh?
Yeah, boy, you adjusted well to that weight.
Yeah,
you really dialed that thing in.
Yeah, you didn't have a choice, right?
Yeah,
well,
you did have a choice. So tell us what it was like with the Rulos. I know Gary told me that you came up there and you stayed with them all the time. You guys worked on a car. You slept on a couch. You're probably one of the very few drivers I know today that can take a car apart and put it back together and understand it and really make the thing work. And I think the Rulos helped you with a lot of that, helped you learn that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've never shied away from working on any of my race cars growing up. I've liked to be out in the shop and helping Dad with any of the hot rod stuff or the race cars, whatever it was, and I've always liked understanding what it is that makes it work. And so when we got to go ARCA racing with the Rulo brothers, they were based out of Midlothian, Illinois, which is just south of Chicago. So I basically went up there for a couple months at a time and went to work in the shop. And I got to learn more about ARCA cars, about big cars, stock cars, and started tearing them down, maintaining them, Tell you what I learned really quick is I didn't like fixing grill screens or front fenders.
Yeah.
You learned really, really easily that you needed to take care of that stuff, because it wasn't like Legends Car Racing where you unbolt a bumper and throw a new one back on and go again. It's a lot of time and it's a lot of work. I learned a lot about taking care of equipment. So I did get to, I wasn't on a couch for very long. I ended up with a bedroom up there. So they had a spare bedroom there at the shop. I stayed up there through the summers and back and forth a little bit through the year. Not flying, of course. It was a 12 and a half to a 14 hour drive back and forth. But got to learn a lot about the race cars. I think in 2012 again, so the last year there, last full-time year, we put, I think it was 19 or 20 different chassis on the racetrack in a season of ARCA. With a second car that was more than part-time, but not full-time, right? It was, I don't know, three-quarters of a season. We were hustling. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had so many different chassis that had to be built, and you know, so much stuff had to be swapped over car to car. You just got into a rhythm. You figured out how to make it quick.
Yeah.
How to make sure you checklisted everything so that you didn't have any problems when you got to the track, and that's what let us run every lap that year we won a championship and won a couple of races along
the way. Yeah, that was incredible, Chris. That was an incredible year. I mean, Roush Fenway gave us what we needed. Gary put it all together, made it all work. I mean, it was Roush Yates engines. I mean, Dave built a lot of them. Mr. Ham there, I built a lot of them. I mean, you know, it was a pretty awesome year.
So it's one of the cooler stats to brag about. I don't like to brag much, but that is something that had never been done in ARCA history and hasn't been yet again. So not only does
is that
mean
right?
we never had a mechanical failure, we also never finished a lap down in a full season.
Yeah.
So that was something that's very, very difficult to do and has been for a very long time. We were able to get it done. So that was it's something it can never be broken, right? It can be tied, but it can never be beat.
Yeah.
So
and you had the best.
That's a good fact. It can be tied, but it can't be beat. That's pretty cool.
And you had the best engine guy going with you too, taking care of the engines.
Oh, Nick definitely took care of us week to week. So.
Yes, and
you were busy back then too. You had tons of motors out there to run through at the racetrack.
Yeah, a couple times there at Daytona, I think between the Wayne Canner, Michael Reardon, and myself, and Kenny Majors, and a few of the other guys. I think we had 17 cars at Daytona twice.
And that was back in the days of plug checks, right?
Yeah.
We actually had to do the clean cuts and pull plugs out after several runs.
Yeah, it was a lot of hard work, but it was a lot of fun. It was very rewarding when we had a chance to win all the time, you know? And that's what it's about.
Yeah, and that's it. You're not going to win every week, but to have the opportunity to, and to know that you're going to have the speed or the equipment or the people – or all of the above to have that opportunity. That's what was fun. It was fun rolling into the racetrack, and everybody there knew they were going to have to race you for that win that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, just good times.
Yeah.
Well,
I know a lot of them. They're like, man, Buescher's here. He's going to be tough to beat, you know? And I'm like, man, I love to hear that all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I know Nick was working his tail off. Every time I saw him, he looked like he was just getting – I mean, he's always going and going and going, though, and he's still come out and play softball with us and all this stuff. I mean, he's the toughest guy I've ever worked around, I can tell you that. He'll play third base, and he'll get balls nailed right at him, and he just swoops them up. I mean, you know, so anyway.
See, engine guys, I don't envy y'all.
I was just trying to protect myself.
Yeah, there you go, Nick. All right. Well, Nick, thanks so much for calling, buddy. And appreciate it.
You got it. And thanks a lot, Dave. And you take good care of Chris here, okay?
Oh, absolutely, man.
Good
we'll
talking
do,
to you, Nick.
We'll talk
Have
to
a
you
good
soon.
Night.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, Nick.
Good See night.
You.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, yeah, Nick Ramey. He's just not many around like him.
Yeah. Good people right there.
We got a gentleman that keeps commenting here you might want to know. He says you are one of the few that can build a car from the bottom up. That's Stephen Knipe.
Oh, yeah.
You remember him in the Arca days?
Yep.
So he wants you to recount the last lap at Road America.
Oh, yeah. That was, okay, so that was 2013. So we only ran four races with the Ruo brothers that year. So I was running, we ran a couple early in the year, and I ran, I believe, six or seven Xfinity races that year. And then when we weren't racing on those 11 or 12 weekends, I worked in the shop at Roush and was the interior guy for the 16 Xfinity car. So, a busy year. But the four ARCA races that we ran were Daytona, Road America, Salem, and New Jersey. And so Road America, it came down to the last lap. We were running third, and we'd been competitive the whole time, and we were close. We were right there with the other two. We went down into turn five, and I remember going in there, and it was Chase Elliott and Andrew Ranger decided to see who could break the farthest down into that corner, and I was probably three car lengths back, maybe five, somewhere right in there. And I remember I drove in to my absolute max braking point, as far as I could go and still make the corner. And when I got on the brakes, they had not hit the brakes yet, and they were several car lengths ahead of me, right? So I knew something bad was going to happen. And about that time, Chase turned around backwards. He slid in to turn five backwards, right up against Andrew Ranger, who ended up locking him up and went off. Missed the corner completely, both of them, and basically all we had to do was turn left and finish the lap. At that point, you're like, all right, we're good to go. And then look up and didn't realize that Ranger did not lose that much time. He checked up, got pointed back, and was coming hard, and was very good at driving into the corner and using those passing zones and the braking zones. So we ended up grabbing that win there. In a pretty spectacular fashion in the closing laps. Wow. And I remember, so we went to victory lane. One of my ARCA patches actually fell off of my Xfinity suit, so I ended up getting fined for that. So it basically was a net zero on the weekend. Yeah. And then I had to cut short our victory lane, so not our victory lane celebration, our victory interviews, because I had to go down to turn one and spot for Billy Johnson, who was running the 16 Xfinity car right after the ARCA race. So I did not have time to thoroughly go through all of the interviews. We got through a lot of the big ones, but they were rolling around the track, and I was like, guys, I have to go. Like, I hate to be that way, but I got to go grab a radio. I got to go spot. And I ended up having to run down to the bleachers down there in turn one and got ready for Billy Johnson to run that race in the car that I was working on at the same time. So yeah, it was a very wild couple hours.
So you won the, was it 2011? You won the ARCA of the year, is that right? In the ARCA.
ARCA,
correct. Yep.
And in 2012, you won the championship, and then you made your Xfinity debut 2011 running part time.
Yeah. My Xfinity debut was not planned. That was, I ran two races that year. I ran Richmond and Darlington, just off of Trevor Bain was driving the car full time.
Yes.
And I think he got bit by a spider or something, I believe. I can't remember exactly what the circumstances were.
Right.
Yeah. But ultimately, they were, we were getting ready to go to Salem that weekend of Richmond, and we did go to Salem.
Yeah.
But we got a call, flew to Richmond. I did my NASCAR physical, my NASCAR drug test in the infield at the track, had to buy a license at the track.
Oh, how about that?
Went through that whole process real quick.
Sure.
Went and got fitted up in the car, which was basically, hey, do you fit? And I was like, good enough.
Good enough, and, yeah. I'm sure that was exciting for you.
Went and ran a race. Yeah, it was so... it was a whirlwind. Like I didn't hardly know what hit me.
Yeah. It's not like you had time to prepare like you had all week or a month, which is probably better that way.
Film, you didn't get to think about it. And, I remember qualifying Jack came up to me and was like, you know, just want to tell you not to overdrive this corner. Everybody has a bad habit the first time here, just way overdriving turn one. So just get in, wrap the bottom. And got through qualifying. I don't remember how it ended up, but we got into driver intros for the race. And in ARCA, as soon as we got done with intros, you got in the car and you did the anthem while you were getting strapped in. Well, in Xfinity, you didn't do that. And I was getting in the car when we got done, when they're just getting ready to start the anthem.
Yeah.
And I had somebody come over to me like, hey, you need to get back out. Like, we don't do that yet. Yes. So
yeah,
it was just those little things you didn't know at the time. And we ended up running that race. I lost my ear molds. Something happened. I can't remember if it was ear molds or radios, but we lost radios by the end of the race, which made it very difficult.
Sure.
And so we ended up, I think we ended up 17th. We were running in the top 10.
Okay.
And I can't remember if we missed a pit stop or exactly how it went. But
yeah, that's got to be tough if we can't communicate.
Yeah. And we hadn't, it's not like I knew the team. It's not like we had our hand signals yet, right?
Right.
Like, I don't know what tight or loose is with these these guys. And
yeah, but you only lost one lap in that race. That's pretty good.
It wasn't that bad. It was, it was
pretty good for Darlington.
I was pretty happy. So
yeah, so that was impressive right there. Real quick, I want to say hey to Suzette McGuire's in California, and Sissy O'Dell and Don Clark here in Statesville.
Man.
So missed them earlier.
Tuning in from all over the country. Huh?
All over the place, man. Yeah. I need to get some of my Australian family to tune in sometime. But let's see, they're probably in the bed right now. But
holy mackerel.
Anyway, yeah, that's right. All right, so then you're all right, so keep rolling with that.
So, like I said, I'd been driving everywhere. That's how we got around in ARCA. In Legends Car days, you drove in the hauler, you know, the normal short track racing. And we got done with that Richmond race on Saturday night, and we were running Salem on Sunday. And was trying to figure out how I was going to get to the track. We flew commercial to get to Richmond in time.
Oh, yeah.
And I know, I remember Reiser got it worked out with Matt Kenseth to borrow his plane to get to Salem. So I ended up, for the first time, I got to go on a private jet. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting on board. I was the only one there because, you know, I was the only one heading to Salem that day. And got on the plane and took off, and it was too easy. I was like, this is it. Like, we're already here. And I've told Matt thank you before, but I definitely owe him for that ride that day, and ended up making my weekend a little bit easier.
Yeah, that's very cool. I'm surprised Jack didn't come pick you up in his P51 Mustang or something. You know,
man,
that would have been nice, wouldn't it?
That would have been awesome.
he's brought the Pistons in our shop before, and those suckers are huge,
right?
Yes.
So we got to tour really cool. where they refurbish or rebuild and refurbish the P51 engines up there in Livonia.
Wow,
it is awesome.
Neat. I'm sure. Yeah,
it's amazing.
I was looking for so we were talking about that sweatshirt you got on, right? And I'm assuming maybe it's the same one in this picture. I got the picture pulled up here.
It probably is. I keep getting made fun of for bringing out my antiques, but man, this this New Balance hoodie is like the most comfortable one we've ever gotten. So
like me, save. Yeah, that's right. If they're comfortable, you keep them forever.
Right.
I've got a jacket I got from Joe Nemechek from Nemco Motorsports when I jacked for his Busch car back in the day, and I still have it. It's one of the best, warmest coats I have, and that was like 1980 or 90. Seven or something like that.
Absolutely.
I was trying to find the ring from the championship, the Xfinity championship 2015. I've got it in here somewhere.
You know, this
collection.
Looks like a really good problem to have right here.
Yeah, I know. I have
how many rings you got in this bag here?
I think there's 13 in there. I don't need to leave them sitting around though, do I?
No.
And I meant to do this before the show, so y'all, I apologize for not. Yes. So anyway, yeah. They're still going.
Look at this guy over here.
I'll have to show you after the show what all, because, yeah, a lot of them are Daytona 500s, and there's championships, and there's Indy rings, too, as well. All right, so when I find the ring, then we can carry on. That's another 500. Look at that.
So mine's in a – oh,
yes,
wow.
Yes. That's one of the Daytona 500 ones.
So if yours is the same as mine, mine was in a blue box, not black. But
oh, yeah. I've got the boxes all mixed up by now.
Okay. Well, I can't help you then.
But all right. Go figure. It's probably going to be the last one.
Yeah, that's how it works.
I didn't know that one was hard to open, so I figured I would set it aside and maybe – yeah. Is that the one?
That looks right.
Yeah.
I keep getting right. I can't remember between my ARCA one and
I'll try to do a zoom in and show y'all. All right, so yeah, and so continue with the
so I guess for what it's worth, that's yeah. that's the wrong championship ring.
This is the wrong
That's the wrong one.
So it you is got, the you, last one. I gotta open this one. Gosh. So I gotta open this very last one that's really
just
tight.
Keep going through all these things.
There we go. So this I hope this is it. I mean,
I hope
you know,
so at this point.
I mean, because I don't now I'm starting to
see, Redwood makes sense because that was the first year Xfinity was sponsoring it.
If it's got Chris Buescher on the side, then it would be the right one.
That's it right there.
Okay. All right. Yep. I was starting
last
to get a little
worried.
Last
one did the
now.
Trick.
Yeah, about that. Ain't that crazy? All right. So yeah, I'll show y'all if I can zoom in here close enough or maybe hold it up to the camera somewhere. The camera's right here.
Where is it?
I'll hold it up here in just a little bit. Or I might have Phil or Phil's friend. So anyway. All right, so continue on with your you ran in the Xfinity Championship.
So,
which is where this picture's from when you come by the shop.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to come celebrate with the engine shop after that one. So I guess
yeah, that's it.
After 2011, we went to let's see, 2012, we went ARCA racing full time with the Ruwa brothers again. There you go. You're getting the you can kind of see that thing in there, huh?
Yeah, and the sides have the. I'll tell you a story right quick. My dad, my very first Daytona 500 ring was when Ward Burton won in 2002. So I take it over to my dad and I hand it to him and I was like, man, this is like a super proud moment. He's gonna love this ring. And we're standing out in his driveway and it goes ding 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 on the driveway. It didn't hurt it though, surprisingly. Maybe one little nick on it, but yes, I was. You know, it was one of those nervous moments. I guess he just, as soon as it got in his hand,
yeah.
it just like.
It's
dropped
like, what do I do?
Onto the pavement, yes. And there I go.
I like that one.
That. Yes. Jeez. Thank you, Phil. Maybe it was my nervous moment whenever
it might have been. It's starting to look like it.
All right. I'm going to put this one on.
There you go.
So anyway.
Hard to lose that way.
Yeah, man. That's a big ring to it. It reminds me of one of the, was it Dixon? One of the Indy car racers come through the shop one time, and he had one on, and that sucker was huge. Or maybe it was a drag
race. It's not a everyday wearing ring, is
no,
it?
No, it's not, for sure, yes. All right. So anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
no,
you.
No, you're good. Go I got to looking at it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we went ARCA racing full-time in 2012 again, and like we were talking with Nick there, that was a year that I think we won two races that year, but the main thing was the consistency. We were in position to win several others and finish second or third. But we didn't get bogged down with accidents. We didn't have mechanical failures. It was putting that second car on track for a bunch of races was a lot of extra work as well. And it wasn't like we had a full-time just full team of people at the shop working on these cars every week. It was, the two Ruwa brothers. It was Gary's son, David, myself, and then we had a circle of guys that came over and volunteered their time from body guys to Bill doing a bunch of the electrical to trying to think of what else, but all the different things that went along with trying to keep that thing rolling. It was amazing how well it worked.
Yeah.
And how many hours we worked. Those were 80, 90 hour work wees. Getting the van and drive to the next track and do it all over again. So it was very busy. It was rewarding at the same time. It was fun at the same time. As exhausting, like there was just so many different things that went along with it. But at the end of the day, it was awesome to be able to stand up on that stage at the end of the year and be able to hold a trophy and get that ring and say that we were able to do that in the most efficient way possible. So
yeah,
pretty neat. 2013 was the part time in both series. We ran those four ARCA races. I believe it was seven Xfinity races. And when that came up, I told Riser, I was like, hey, this isn't going to keep me busy enough. Like, I need something to do.
Yeah.
So I'd really like to come work in the shop if that's an option. You know, I know there's probably some liabilities in there that aren't necessarily ideal for y'all. I'm not the first Roush driver to work in the shop, but I was the first one to ask to work in the shop and not told to.
Yeah.
So mine did not come from wrecking race cars, which was a good thing.
That's what I was going to mention. I know that sometimes that happened.
Yeah, that was the riser boot camp, right? If you wadded up several race cars, you got to go figure out what it took to build those ahead of time, and, and you're going to respect them a little bit more at the end of the day. So, so I ended up being the interior guy for the 16 car, which meant that I got to put my own seat in the car, which was awesome because I knew I was going racing. And at the end of that weekend, I had to pull my seat out to put someone else's in, which was not fun.
That one
hurts. Yeah. So you think back on it, I think we had that six or seven drivers in that car throughout that season. Myself, Billy Johnson, Marcus Ambrose, Ryan Truex, not Junior. I always get that mixed up.
I know, because Martin and Junior, right?
He ended up practicing the car for one of the drivers. So we had to fit in a bunch of different guys to fit in this thing to run it. And that ended up falling a lot on me. And again, was difficult to put different driver stuff in the car that I wanted to be running. But
what goes along with this other question is Rachel asked, what is your favorite paint scheme of a race car you drove?
That's a tough one. When you look at my paint schemes through the years, we didn't ever run one for a year. We never had that one sponsor that covered the entire season. I had 12 fire suits from 2015 in the Xfinity series. 12 different branded fire suits. That's not including the second and third ones of some of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's so many paint schemes I could go through, but probably I'm a green fan. Got my lime green cup that I had to get done just to say it was green. And
there you go.
But I really liked the yellow and green Advocare car that we ran at Darlington on the Xfinity side. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny. We did that was when Throwback Week was starting to build the momentum and get real big. And so we decided to throw out a teaser and make everybody guess what was coming.
Yeah.
And we didn't really put it together that we weren't doing a throwback. We were unveiling a paint scheme. And it was yellow and green, and it had no decals on it whatsoever, right?
Okay.
And so everybody went straight to John Deere. Chad Little throwback right there.
Right,
and everyone was really mad when it was not a throwback.
Yeah.
It was still one of the better-looking cars. One of my favorite cars that we've put on track. But
you could think about the Days of Thunder. Was it the City Chevrolet car? It was kind of that color.
Yep.
Black and yellow, yeah.
Had the black in it as well. So I know green's supposed to be bad luck in racing, but I can't buy into it. I like green either. Too much.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's probably my favorite paint scheme, just from my personal bias. But I actually really liked our Fastenal paint scheme from last year as well, because it was flat. And it was the first time I had anything that wasn't glossy. You know, been able to start kind of changing up a little bit of what was been on the car. So
you see this one I have on there? I've got that one on the screen. Can you see that?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's a pretty car. It's kind of hard to tell from pictures, but it was the flat black actually has like a ghosted in gray honeycomb design, which you really can't get from TV or a lot of pictures. So there was actually some really neat details in that paint scheme that you can't see until you're really up close.
Is that the same one pretty much? Possibly.
That was it, yeah. So that was our Fastenal paint scheme for the majority of last season. The Speedway still got glossed over, you know, trying to get rid of all that drag.
Yeah. All right.
What about a favorite track?
Bristol.
Oh, yeah.
Concrete Bristol.
Oh, okay.
So Bristol is by far my favorite. Darlington's second in there, but Bristol, I absolutely love that place. I have from the first time I've run there. And We've been fast every time. You know, that helps, right? You know, as soon as you get your good run at a racetrack, it's
that's strange because a lot of drivers shy away from Darlington. There's only one other driver I've ever heard that really likes Darlington. That's Ryan Newman.
Yeah,
that's a driver's track. So that's you like that challenge. And Bristol's not easy either.
No, neither of them are.
Yeah,
but I love Bristol because it's what you grew up racing, right? It's the closest thing I can get to Salem from the ARCA series.
It's my
now,
favorite to see.
Salem wasn't as polished and not quite as smooth or there's a lot of different words here. But
so those are two tracks that when I jacked man for Kyle Petty, he said he should fill up Bristol with water and stock it with bass. And then he said the same thing for Darlington the next week.
Yep. I actually just saw that that video clip. I think it was earlier last week. I just happened to see that mm-hmm. little video clip. I don't know. I got on a YouTube kick. But
yeah, there you go.
So I love Bristol. And then Darlington, I love the challenge because it is different on both ends. And I know it is Ryan Newman's favorite track. So, you know, we go there, we both have high expectations for last year and this one coming up, and we get to go there more than once now, which is pretty exciting as well. I gotta be careful how I say it. I want to go dirt racing in the Cup Series. I think a race is going to be awesome.
Sure.
I think it's, you know, something that I've wished for since my first Cup race. That being said, I lost a concrete Bristol to do it, and I'm a little heartbroken.
I get it. I understand, yeah.
I really wanted that opportunity to have two real Bristol races and then put on the dirt for an exhibition or whatever you want to call it. But I'm a little bummed that we lost a Bristol to do this.
Yeah.
But I am excited about it at the same time. So it just – if it had been been a way where we could kept our two concrete races, I'd be – over the moon. If it was a way we could have taken the dirt race to a different track, perfect. You know, either way, but
Martinsville.
There you go. Martinsville's not my favorite. You can put dirt on it both times. I don't care.
Slide right off.
There you go. All right. Say hey to Loftus Outdoors is tuned in. And we had a question. Where did you live in Florida? It was from Paul Rodriguez.
Melbourne.
Okay.
Or Melbourne Beach.
So I remember.
Just south a little bit of Daytona.
Okay.
An hour and a half or so.
Okay.
I remember when we go down for speed, well, the old speed weeks when you had a couple days of nothing going on, I remember driving down to try and find the house that I guess I came home from the hospital to and try and check it out. I don't think I ever found it, but I just drove down there just to say I did it.
Yeah, very good. I was down there looking around for the best damn garage in town, the Smoky Inn place.
Yep.
You know, that had burned down.
Yeah, so I saw it before that. I was down there with Ken Reagan, and we were riding around. It was kind of neat. So when you talk about safer barriers, right, and how, you know, that's fairly new to our sport, I'm almost positive what we could see over the fence was a prototype of a safer barrier using tires. That had been designed by Smokey back in the day, right? So, I remember seeing that and Ken pointing that out, that that's something that he had talked about a long time ago, but not been able to, I guess, implement.
Yeah. He was a smart man. Yeah. I just finally got his book, Power Secrets, I think it is. I wanted it for 30-something years now, 35 years. Anyway, I finally got it. I'm like,
cool.
I went with the engine blueprinting book instead, and it was $15. So back in the day, and I think I got a good bit out of that.
Yeah, it probably worked out, huh?
Yes, it did. And Scott Trevison is saying, he says, great show, guys. I believe Chris has gained a bunch of new fans tonight, and I'm one of them. So very good.
Cool. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. So I want to ask you about your, I know we're kind of fast forwarding a little bit, but I know you got over an hour to drive probably. But okay, if we can go into the Cup Series after you finished talking about the Xfinity.
Yeah, so I guess I never I'm talking slow, but
no, you stay as long as you want to. I just don't want to, you know, if it's so, I don't want to hold you till 9 o'clock. And then
it's my
drive.
Fault. I live out in the boonies, so
yeah. Well, that's all. Hey, we can keep going till 9 if that's all right with you. But,
I can keep on rolling for a bit here. So,
all right, cool. That's
good. The Xfinity days, let's see, 2013, we got through that part-time season. We got to go full-time racing in 14 and 15. Now, there was an asterisk next to both of those years because we weren't sure we were running full-time either year. Mm-hmm. It started off with, hey, we'll go to this point and kind of see where we lie at that time. And so we made it through 2014. Really never had too much thought that we weren't going to make that full season. But I remember going in 2015, we were only going to run about a third of that year, and then we were going to have to make a decision on what we were going to do because we didn't have sponsors secured for that. And I think our whole team made it hard on Jack to pull the plug because we were leading the points at the time when we were going to be starting to miss races. So that worked out pretty good. Got a couple wins that year, and basically I think we led the points from like a third of the season all the way through the end. Mm-hmm. It was the last season before the chase format or the playoff format, whatever you call it. So we got it done on the old fashioned point system.
Right.
Honestly, my preferred system.
Sure.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe not the popular idea, but maybe
not. A lot of people agree.
I'm pretty sure. I liked growing up racing when that first race mattered just as much as the last one.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't like the fact that if you, you know, found your way in and, you know, lucked through one or two races, all of a sudden you were in a good spot. I know there's a bunch of metrics to it, and so they have tuned it now to where at the end of the day it does your season long consistency matters, but I don't know, I like the old system of you did everything you could every week.
Yeah.
You know, if you won a race, you didn't get to go into experiment mode.
Yeah.
You didn't get to go into take a bonsai move and go for that just because, you know, you didn't have those options. You had to finish every race still. So
yeah, that's right.
I don't know. It's how we grew up racing. It's how every track does it. And I liked it. So
yeah, I would agree with that, and I can definitely see how that would be the case, especially if you grew up racing that way and that's what you're used to, and then all of a sudden you have these different variables thrown in that just completely throws everything off. Like you said, driver wins a race, and then he's like, well, I'm in. You know, the next three races I can do whatever I want to do, and right. You know, bonsai moves and stuff like that.
I don't know, it's hard to fully get into it for me. I don't like change, though. I'm stubborn.
Yeah.
I don't do good with any kind of change, so it's hard on me. But it was I enjoyed doing it the way we did, and it was a really neat year.
Yeah. Yep. So RD says, awesome hearing your history in racing, Chris. Great hearing that you also worked on the cars as well, because remember the days of dirt biking with the wood trails, racing with the wipeouts and such. And I know some of the other drivers, John Hunter Nemechek. I remember actually seeing him. He was probably 3 years old. His dad was already taking him to dirt bike tracks and stuff.
Okay.
But some of the other drivers I know started out with two wheels, but I used to make fun of him. But one of the guys I used to work with, he raced like Road Atlanta and all that stuff on these bikes where they put their knee down on the ground. I'm like, dude, you're crazy.
See, I would never do that.
Yeah. All right. Yep. Yeah. So you were, what I want to ask you about when we get to the Cup Series is I remember watching that race. It was on a Monday though, because it was like rain delayed, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. It was already delayed a day.
We all go to the break room. We're watching it as the shop because I was building engines for you back then, of course. And then it was kind of strange because you were in, I don't know what building you were in, but it was like it was you and a reporter and a camera, but all your crew guys were somewhere else, you know, and it's just kind of like you hanging out in there, from what I remember.
It was
Pocono.
Still one of the most strange endings to me. Mm-hmm. And when I look at the end of that race, we knew rain was coming. That was inevitable. There was this massive storm, and it came, and it flooded the garage, and I'll get to that in a minute. But we knew it was coming, and everybody did. So everybody started peeling in the pit, thinking they still had plenty of time before the system got there. Mm-hmm. Well, what nobody knew was the fog. And so everybody had pitted. Well, then this fog starts rolling in. We were a little bit off sequence already from a flat tire. And so Bob Osborne made the call that we were going to run it out. We were going to run it long and see if we could, you know, get one of those bands from that rain system coming in and try and sneak a win out of it. So we were running second, and Jamie McMurray, I'm almost positive Jamie McMurray pitted, and he was leading. And so at that time, the fog had gotten pretty thick, and Spotter comes over the radio, says, "Hey, I'm having a really hard time seeing you back there now. How's your vision?" I was like, "Oh, it's good. I can see. I'm fine."
Yeah.
and I realized as soon as I said that, that was the wrong answer.
Oh.
I was supposed to talk about how bad the vision was and how I couldn't see, but because we were getting close on fuel as well, and so we made it.
Yeah.
I think we made it three or four more laps, and then it legitimately got to the point where you could not see.
Yeah.
You know, Pocono spread out a lot anyway, but from the spotter stand, our spotter could not see turn three.
Yeah.
So imagine turn one's non-existent. Mm-hmm. The backstretch there doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
It got so foggy that they couldn't spot. So they had to throw a yellow. We ran yellow for so many laps around Pocono. They're like, save gas.
Sure.
And I was like, man, they're going to run us out here trying to run this. And so we finally red flagged it, came down pit road, and we're standing out there. And, you know, you're looking towards turn one, and it's not there. You know, you're sitting there staring at it, and you're like, man, I really need this fog to stay here until this rain gets here, because we knew the rain was coming.
Yeah.
And so we're sitting out there. Next thing you know, all the other crews start tearing down pit boxes. It's like, okay, we got to be close to calling it. Well, it was 30 minutes later before we got another update.
Yeah.
So pit boxes are now closed, covered up, and the crews have left. They have evacuated the grandstands. They have evacuated pit road. I think there was 8 of us sitting out there waiting for an official call. Like, what are we waiting on? Like,
yeah.
We have a bad storm coming in. You know it's bad because you've evacuated the people. And we're just going to stand out here on pit road and just keep looking around at each other, I guess, having conversations. So it was I think it was 80 minutes from the time the red flag came out to the time they called it finally.
Yeah.
There were drivers that were in the air, had already gone back, knew it was over, on a plane, and were in the air.
Mm-hmm.
That
was usually when Earnhardt was around back in the day. If you saw him leaving, then you know the race is called.
Okay, so I believe it was Denny Hamlin now. When Denny leaves, you know he's got the info. So.
Yes, how about that?
So, yeah, we waited out there forever. And so the unfortunate part about it is we waited so long that when they finally called it, lightning was in the area. And so we were not allowed to celebrate in the Pocono Victory Lane, which is really neat, right? You get to go up on the terrace and kind of get the overlook.
Right.
So we didn't get to do any kind of celebration as a team in the normal area. You didn't get to do a burnout. You didn't get to have that raw emotion there. Mm-hmm. We did a makeshift Victory Lane under the garage.
Yeah.
As the rain started coming down, it was still pretty neat, right? Because we had just won our first race. In our rookie year.
How did that feel? I mean, it had to have been amazing.
Oh, it was pretty wild. I mean, Bob Osborne was smiling from ear to ear. Everybody on that team, it was so cool for Bob Jenkins in front row. You know, it was just a gutsy call that ended up working out. Mm-hmm. And you know, we put ourselves in the position to do it. Had the right strategy when we needed, and a little bit of luck as well, and it ended up being an awesome day. So that put us into the playoffs, which you know, I just got done talking about how I didn't like that system, but that one benefited us. That immediately took us from where we were in points and put us into the playoffs. Yeah. So that was pretty neat to say we made the playoffs in our rookie season. So you know, it was cool. And so getting back to the flooding part, so when we got done with Victory Lane celebration, went to the media center. When I walked out of the media center, again, it was so late that the only hauler that was in the garage area was our 34 Loves hauler.
Yeah.
The only one. Uh-huh. And it was raining so hard that the garage flooded. And I'm still in my fire suit shoes. It was almost up to my knees to walk across the garage area so I could get to the hauler to get my stuff. And the only reason our hauler hadn't left is because all my clothes in my wallet and my phone were on the hauler still.
Oh,
so I kind of had him jammed up. But
yes.
Man, the bottom fell out. I mean, it was just flooded. I don't even know who still, but they TP'd my motor home, then the rain hit it, so it was all wet TP everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
It was all in good fun, but man, that rain sure made that cleanup a little bit of a struggle.
Yes. So did that win like give you the hunger? I mean, you probably had the hunger anyway because you're wanting to win. You're out there driving, wanting to win. But did that be like, I got to do that again?
Not necessarily. Like it's always what you're trying to do every weekend.
Right. Yeah.
I remember as we got farther in that year, it took us into the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're trying to figure out, all right, how can we make ourselves go past the first cutoff? And so I don't think Bristol was in the playoffs yet. We went down to Bristol, and I think we ran third or fourth there that year, and that was the most competitive I'd been at Bristol in a cup car, which was still a rookie season, right? But the first time around, we were decent. Second time, we were fast and, legitimately had a shot to win the thing, but it would have been tough. But we ended up with a really good finish and went off into the playoffs. We ended up getting cut in the first round, and, it was a couple of accidents in there that ended up costing us any chance at progressing on. But at the end of the day, it was still neat to say that, we won that race, that we made the playoffs, and,
absolutely,
you're just trying to figure out how to get that next one.
And you can always say you won a cup race. I mean, many people can say that, really,
Yep, absolutely. So there's no asterisk next to it in the history books. It was a win.
Actually, you won an ARCA, Xfinity, and Cup.
Yes.
So, I mean, in many races, but...
And championship.
Yeah.
Championship. That's,
yeah, we've got championships in two of the three.
NASCAR champion.
The cup is next.
Hey, when NASCAR and ARCA merged, I was like, all right, did that just make me a two-time NASCAR champion? Or...
All right. Yes.
Or do we still get to say... Or do we still say 1-1? But, that was a little tidbit I tried to use.
That's very cool. And I just got a message from... Well, Andrea, I was talking about John Hunter. And she just sent me his phone number because I was going to try to get him to come in here. So we'll get him on here soon.
There you go.
And then we had a question from Jim Dooley. All right. So Chris, he says, what an awesome driving past. I can hear your voice and the passion or you have for the sport. You were born to race. The very best to you. Very good. Jim Dooley's up in Virginia.
Okay.
And a great cut win, Chris. Suzette says McGuire was super thrilled for you. Yeah.
I definitely appreciate it. It was unique, right? And still chasing that next one now. So
yeah, we were excited in the engine shop. I mean, like you said, it just drug out.
Yeah.
And it was like, man. And then, but for you to get your win like that was, I mean, pretty good. You to get a win. We're always happy to get a win. But, that was very cool, especially when you're just like when David Reagan got his win, he got a win at Talladega. And I guess in a first cup wins is what we like to see that as well.
Right.
Always. Because, I mean, we're used to winning so much all the time. With Kansas and
I can tell
Edwards
by the rings out here.
That's right. And Biffle and all these guys. But, man, when you see a younger guy come in there and win one like that, it's
for me as a photographer going to Victory Lane, I was always so excited to see a first-time winner. I remember I was there for yours, but it was a deluge of rain, and sadly in that garage stall, it's not nearly as neat, but it's still a win. One of the neatest wins, first-time winner I've ever saw was Scott Riggs at Nashville. I mean, I don't know, early 90s or something like that, but yeah, first-time winners are always really neat to see. Now, one of the questions we had was that we know James Buescher is your cousin. Do you ever get to race against him in your career in NASCAR or, growing up?
We almost never raced against each other. He is several years older, and so pretty much growing up, he was always in the next class or the next series, and so we hardly ever raced each other growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then even once we got to NASCAR stuff, I was running ARCA when he was running trucks. So 2012, when we won the ARCA championship, that was the same year he won the truck championship. Almost positive of that. And then we ran very little Xfinity race. I think he ran a part-time Xfinity race when I was running. I can't remember if I was running part-time Xfinity or full-time then, but really we probably have a dozen races that we competed against each other. So he has, it's kind of wild to think, you know, we grew up racing, started on motorcycles together. We ran both motorcycles, piled them in the back of the truck and took off. So I don't know how we didn't race against each other more growing up.
Well, he never progressed to the cup level. He went to Xfinity and that was it, or?
I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
I can't remember if he – I want to say he made some cup starts, but I can't tell you for sure.
Yep. So did you have a – in my notes it says you had a horrifying barrel roll at a super speedway.
Horrifying? Who put horrifying?
I know. That's why I was trying to remember if it was that.
That was it was like a free ride at the carnival, man.
I got pictures of that.
Is that right? Yeah. So y'all see it. This is probably a stupid question. I'm not going to ask the question, but I'm sure this is what people say. What was going through your mind whenever this was going on? Nothing. So, really? Grass, sky, whatever.
The worst part about that barrel roll, well, one, Talladega still uses it in all their advertising, so get to relive that a lot.
Okay.
Two was, we were behind the wreck that happened. Mm-hmm. We had checked up, and somebody, I can't remember who it was.
Brian Scott. I got a photo of Brian Scott right under your car when it was up in the air. I know that.
Oh,
I don't know if he was the one
he
that
was,
hit you.
No, he wasn't the one that hit me, though. I believe it was Annette. But I believe somebody turned a net checking up. Basically, the jam up behind the wreck is what caused us to flip. So we got right reared as we were on the brakes slowing down. Mm. And it was one of those, like, you didn't even know what happened. You know, I'm sitting here holding the wheel on the brakes, and you're looking out trying to find out what's going on. And next thing you know, the thing turns hard right.
Lift off.
And it just it picked up immediately. The left side's dug in. And it took off.
Oh, yeah.
And and the thing that I remember is a couple people that I talked to that had rolled over, they're like, man, it just gets silent. Yeah. And it was the absolute truth. There's no noise when that thing is upside down in the air.
Wow.
And it didn't hurt at all. The flipping and the movement, there's no sudden stop. So there really wasn't any pain to it.
Mm-hmm.
We landed back on all fours. The window net wouldn't come down, so I actually went out the roof hatch, which is why we have roof hatches everywhere now. I think they were trying to get rid of that, but
it's a good thing to have for sure.
I think I proved that we need it just in case for some of these races.
Yeah.
And then the next week, I rode around for driver intros in the back of a truck with McMurray, and he asked me, he's like, man, what was that like? It's like, what do you mean? He's like, being upside down. I was like, how long have you been in this series and you've never been upside down? This is my first year. I've already gotten this out of the way. I was like, come on. So I remember just being upset by that. And it wasn't rational to be upset for him not being upside down before. But I was like, man.
Right, yeah.
I was like, I shouldn't, as a rookie, be explaining to a veteran, you know, a couple years from retiring, what it's like to be upside down in a stock car. So that one irked me a little bit.
Sure, yes. I remember talking to David Reagan. I went up to when they moved to the shop, which was Sabco back in the day, right there in Lakeside Park. And it was right after the 10 car was on top of him or something. But anyway, and there was just like sparks being shot right in there on him. And I don't remember where it was. I should probably remember that.
Is that Texas?
It may have been
Kansas, I think.
Kansas?
Yeah.
Okay.
And but his experience about that, you know, he was pretty much getting blasted by all these just
right.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Sparks.
So you just sit there and I'm gonna take a grinding wheel and just lay it on a piece of 2x here and
yes.
Yeah. Perfect.
But I'm sure did any reporters come up to you and say, hey, what were you thinking about while that was happening?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was questions for weeks after that was
sure.
How are you okay? What was it like? And I was like, well, yes. I mean, it's just, you know, honestly, it's like a roller coaster, and it was just wasn't on the tracks.
So my buddy we were talking about earlier, the one that races on, he's done some flips around on his motorcycle, whatever. He's done a lot of that flipping on his motorcycle and broken all kinds of bones and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I said. What goes through your mind? Is it like grass sky? Oh, he's joking with me.
Is he doing them on purpose?
Oh my gosh, he's just crazy.
Okay.
He worked at the engine shop. He was an engine builder's name. We called him Crusher.
Okay.
Steve Blackwell, yes. And maybe he'll watch his show. But we used to pick at him all the time. He would start explaining what he was doing on his bike, and he'd be doing this. I got a little video of him doing this. Anyway.
So yeah, I can never get on a street bike for one.
Yes.
And then open wheel. I won't even consider open wheel racing of any kind, sprint cars, midgets, anything like that. It's just some people are crazy.
When the wheels hit each other, when another wheel hits another wheel, somebody's going to go flipping. Yes.
You wouldn't like to drive those modifieds at Loudoun?
I'm not saying I wouldn't like it. I'm saying I'm just not going to.
Yeah.
I'm just not brave enough.
Now, Rachel had asked a question earlier. Is there any series or any type of racing you would like to try? That you haven't.
So, I want to do a little bit of dirt late model racing to try and get ready for Bristol was kind of my idea. And actually had it lined up or was getting pretty close to having a ride figured out to run a handful of races. And it didn't end up quite panning out. But so I would like to do some dirt late model racing. I've run very few dirt races in my career at all. Handful of ARCA races, so I think four of those. I've done a couple of Legends Car races, and I ran a sport mod in Texas on a race weekend. Went out and tried to figure out how to go dirt racing one of those once. So it's very limited, but I've had a blast every time I've done it. So I would really like to do some dirt late model racing. And the next thing I would really like to do, and I keep trying to get Brennan Gaughan to let me go do this. I'd like to go do some off-road racing and go run, like, maybe not Baja, but maybe short course.
Yeah.
Go do some of that. I mean, that's a lot of our free time we spend off-road. We go up to the mountains, go four-wheeling. I don't know. It's something I like doing. I guess I never got that whole off-road motorcycling out of my system completely. So
sure.
I got a couple of different dirt racing that
four wheels
like
is
do.
Better than two in the dirt.
It is. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced of that.
So you're out there near Uari, out that way.
Yeah, we are right down the road from Uari. So we don't go in there much. It's really rocky, so you can't get much speed up on the razors that we usually ride.
Yeah.
But I tell you, so for our program vehicle from Ford Motor Company this year, I got the new F-250 Tremor. And so it's got, from the factory, it's lifted. It's got lockers and limited slip up front.
Nice.
And factory 35s. I was like, man.
Yeah.
It's like we got put on quarantine.
Rock climber.
And I was like, man, let's go into Uari. Let's go test this thing out.
Yeah.
And they ended up closing Uari. And
oh,
so
my
I wasn't
gosh.
Able to do it until, I think, the last week of quarantine. Right before we were getting ready to go back racing, they opened it back up. And so I actually took the truck through there, and you should have seen the people in Jeeps that seen a full size F-250 climbing up these trails.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get their phones out fast
enough.
I
was gonna say,
mean, they're sitting there taking pictures, laughing at us. And here we go, just cruising right on by them, right up the top of the mountain.
That's cool.
And, we got to the top, got out, took some pictures. Like, all right, let's cruise on back down. And so we're coming back down. It's the backside of Daniel, which is the hardest trail there. We were going down the easier side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that whipped their phones out and were laughing at us, they cut a tire on the way down.
Oh,
so we got to return a little laugh and try and help them out. And so I guess we do like to go play around in Uari a little bit. And That Tremor flat out impressed me, honestly. That was pretty neat to take
I saw your
full size in there.
Oh yeah, I bet that was a blast. your skid steer too, right? Saw some on your Instagram.
Oh, did you see my post from was it yesterday?
I think it was yesterday. Or sometime.
Yeah, I sunk the skid steer. My wife didn't know about that until this morning. She's seen my post. She's like, "What what did you do?" Like, well, you were at your parents and I was trying to clean up around the property a little bit, and I buried it, and so which it was raining. I knew better.
Oh, yeah.
But
of course.
And so I went and grabbed a chain and hooked to the buck. I got myself out quicker than I really know what to do with, so
yeah,
it's all good.
Yeah, those things are a lot of fun, aren't they?
It's a blast.
Yeah,
that is probably the most useful piece of equipment I've ever had. Mm-hmm. Just being able to do all kinds of stuff on it.
Yeah.
As we get settled in out there and try and get the farm up and running, it's come in handy.
You got a bush hog for it?
Not for it.
Okay.
Got a little bush hog dragged behind a tractor.
Mm. Yeah.
But I really...
Those work good on the front of the skid steers, too.
I've thought about it, yeah. But I don't think I have a way to run continuous flow through that one.
Okay.
I got to look in and figure out how I can do that.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, I want to thanks, Chris, so much for coming in, hanging out with
absolutely.
Us. And I mean, we can keep talking about stuff, but I know I don't want to hold you up either.
You're all good. I appreciate it. Yeah. So it's good. Good talking through some of that stuff. And
yeah.
Man, it's I don't realize it wasn't that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're only talking 8 or 9 years ago on a lot of this stuff too. Really started in stock car racing. So
man,
it's going quick.
So young, huh, David?
I know, exactly.
You're talking to guys 30 some years, and we remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently, I've hit my head a couple times because my memory is not as good as it should be for 10 years ago.
Well, I'll tell you what helps my memory, though, is doing this stuff right here, because every time I have someone come in and we start talking about back in the day, different things, stories come up, and I'm like, yeah, I remember that, you know, because I was there a lot of times. And but then it just, I don't know, it just really helps.
I can see that.
You'll remember it. With the older you get, you're I don't know.
I'll remember the highlights more.
Yes. Yeah. You will,
maybe
yes.
not the full story, but I'll remember the highlights, and I'll make up what I forget.
Well, and if you forget, then come on here and watch this.
Yeah, there you go.
Because it's always going to be out there. I didn't ask you about the Gen 7 car. How do you like that? I mean, you don't have to, whatever.
So, I got to run it at Daytona at the end of last year, but I was by myself at Daytona. So, you know, they only have one car together, so there's no drafting. You're not going to go fast enough to the point where you're going to push the limits of it. So I can't say that I got a lot of feel for much of it. There's probably two things that I was pretty impressed with. One was the brakes. The stopping power with the larger brake system that you can run with the larger wheels was incredible. That being said, we usually run a very small brake at Daytona anyway, so it's kind of not really apples to apples, but it was impressive.
Yeah.
The second thing is that the sequential shifting is a lot of fun.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you just sit there and you click it back. It's like motorcycle gears or Legends cars, which are motorcycle transmissions, right? So so it's just easy, you know? Once you got into a rhythm, it's quick, it's precise, and I really like that. Now, with that comes the thing that's been built into our heads with an H pattern. Second to third gear is a throwaway from you. It has been for 10 years now. So when you're in second gear with that sequential shifter, it takes everything in your power not to come up through the gears and slap it forward into first. I mean, it is very difficult. I could have ended that test very quickly with one wrong move. So that will take some getting used to. I promise there will be mistakes made trying to get used to that sequential shifting. But it is really neat. And I believe it was a 5-speed. And I believe that's locked in now. So I know they talked about anywhere from 6 to 7 or something. So
yeah. Do you think it's going to make a big difference on the road courses as well?
From what I understand, the road courses are going to be way different.
Okay.
From the road course test that I think it was Kurt and Truex drove. They had another company put together a second car for the Roval. I don't know much about it, but from what I understand, they said it was very fast.
Okay.
For it to be just a couple laps on track, they were already as quick as our current generation cars on the road course. So I think the road courses are going to be a lot better. I think the drivability is going to get a lot better.
That makes sense. But the independent suspension
right.
and all
it
stuff,
definitely does.
It'll be great.
I'm curious, how do y'all, I only got a couple years to go through. How do y'all get through people that have been doing this their whole life? In an hour.
That's a good question.
It's tough.
Yes.
It's tough.
See, that goes back to being older. You remember the highlights, you hit them and you go on, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think the difference is the two is most of them are not still in the sport. And so we don't have to cover any of that, which we didn't cover a lot of that with you, but we did get to hear your whole story. So, I mean, you've really been, how many years have you been racing? Like since you were
22 years of racing something.
There you go.
Yeah.
See, that's a long time.
But I guess stock cars since I was 16.
Yeah. There you go. Mm. Well, this show's about your racing roots, so it doesn't matter. And I don't know. I didn't tell you the story, but it's racing, R-O-U-T-E-S. I changed it because I had put – I'd done a Twitter post, yes, and I said racing, R-O-O-T-S, mm-hmm. and then it was saying this may contain sensitive content. So I was like, all right, I'm changing the name of it. I need to change it anyway because somebody else had a racing roots. And okay. So I thought roots, you know.
That's pretty slick, actually.
The way you
and
got
it worked
there.
Out fine.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's some decals if you like some.
I'm gonna be taking one on the way out.
Yeah. And I might actually get you to sign my my ring box. I didn't think about it the last time. And then
I'll sign
course.
That card, too, before you
send
it off.
Yeah, for Suzette. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. There you go. All right. Well, thank you so much once again. And hopefully someday we'll get you back in. Let's see. After – in another year or so when you win the cup championship, that way we can say we have a three-time championship.
Then we can bring another ring box in and add
yes.
to your collection.
Yes. Bring me a ring. Yeah. Actually, bring me a flag. I wanted one of those
a
flags.
Flag?
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't get one when I left Roush Yates Engines. If you guys are listening, I know you're going to be tuning in tomorrow at least, right there in the shop, Roush Yates Engines. Catch Doug when you see him walking by the hallway. He might be watching too. And tell him, I want one of those flags, please, of course.
You want a checkered flag or one of the championship flags?
Just a checkered flag.
Okay.
Just any checkered flag would do, you know, about this size.
Yep.
About
yep.
this size. You don't even have to put it in a frame. I'll take it.
Honestly, that was probably my favorite part. The favorite trophy from the weekend wasn't necessarily the trophy from the race. It was the flags.
Yeah.
So flags are cool. The flags... When you're running a Roush Yates engine, that flag went to the engine shop, and it goes through the hallways, down the corridors. They're running out of room.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So it's a very neat tradition there. And so I actually went and ordered replicas on a lot of, I think, all my ARCA ones.
Yeah, cool.
I don't think I did on the Xfinity ones, but I need to go do it because the flags are – I want to do the same thing. When I get my shop built at the house there, I want to frame the flags and have a wall for that.
Yeah. Well, if you end up with any extras, like if they messed up in their shipping and they accidentally sent you an extra one,
okay,
then you know where to send it to.
There you go.
All right. Anyway, y'all, thanks for tuning in. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up and hit the subscribe and all that good stuff. And tell your friends about us so you can watch more of this coming up next Monday night. And also, stay tuned. But y'all have a great week. And go back on and make some comments. Ask questions. I'll make sure Chris gets them and can answer them for you. So we'll see y'all next time.